Hey guys, this is Vyom Joshi with Superior North. Welcome back to my channel. Today we will be talking about Ford Motor Company. Ford is the second largest domestic automobile manufacturer in the United States. Today we will review the company's 10K to get a better idea of its business model. Then we'll look at the company's fundamentals by focusing on its key ratios. We'll perform a discounted free cash flow DCF analysis to find the intrinsic value of the company. And finally, do an expected rate of return calculation to see if you were to invest in Ford at the current stock price, what kind of return can we expect on this investment? So let's dive in and review Ford Motor Company. Hey guys, let's start off by looking at the Form 10K, which is the annual report that Ford Motor Company filed with the SEC. This is for the fiscal year that ended December 31st, 2020. And on page 5 of this report, the company provides a business background. Ford Motor Company was incorporated in Delaware in 1919, and its roots can be traced all the way back to Henry Ford. Ford points out that it has about 186,000 employees worldwide, and that the company designs, manufactures, markets, and services a full line of Ford trucks, utility vehicles, and cars, increasingly including electrified versions and Lincoln luxury vehicles. It also provides financial services through the Ford Motor Credit Company, LLC, also known as Ford Credit. And Ford is also pursuing leadership position in electrification, mobility solutions, including self-driving services and connected vehicle services. Next, on page 170 of this report, the company provides its segment information. Ford states that it has three operating segments, the automotive segment, mobility segment, and Ford Credit. The automotive segment primarily includes the sale of Ford and Lincoln vehicles, service parts and accessories worldwide, together with the associated costs to develop, manufacture, distribute, and service the vehicles, parts, and accessories. The segment also includes the revenues and costs related to its electrification vehicle programs. Next is the mobility segment. The mobility segment primarily includes development costs for Ford's autonomous vehicles and related businesses, Ford's equity ownership in Argo AI, a developer of autonomous driving systems, and other mobility businesses and investments, including Spin, a micromobility service provider. And finally, the Ford Credit segment, which is the segment involved primarily with vehicle-related financing and leasing activities. On the next page, the company provides us additional segment information. We can see that for the year 2018 as well as 2019, majority of the company's revenue came from its automotive segment. Similarly, in the year 2020, about $116 billion out of the $127 billion of revenue came from the automotive segment. When we look at the company's total assets, the automotive segment makes up about $110 billion of the company's assets, the mobility segment makes up about $4 billion in assets, and the Ford Credit segment makes up about $159 billion in assets. The reason why the Ford's credit segment, which barely makes less than 10% of the company's total revenue, has about $159 billion in assets is because other people's liabilities are reported as Ford's assets. In other words, when people finance or lease their vehicles, those payments, those liabilities get reported as assets on Ford's balance sheet. Finally, on the next page, the company breaks down its revenue and assets across different geographic regions. For the year 2020, about 82.5 out of the $127 billion in revenue came from the United States, which means about 65% of the company's revenue came from the United States. And when we look at the long-lived assets for the year 2020, about 45.3 out of the $65 billion of assets are located in the United States, which means about 70% of the company's long-lived assets are located in the United States. This makes it obvious that Ford has a big exposure to the United States, the US economy, and the consumer confidence and spending in the United States. Now that we have a brief understanding of Ford's business, its three operating segments, and the revenue breakdown across those segments, let's review the company's fundamentals by focusing on its key ratios. Hey guys, now let's look at Ford's key ratios. I'm on Morningstar looking at Ford Motor Company. Under key ratios, we have the financials. The first item on the list is the revenue. The revenue is the top line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that the company brings in via sales. Back in 2011, Ford's revenue was about $136 billion. And for the year 2020, it was about $127 billion. Apart from the unique year in the year 2020, when the sales dropped off due to the pandemic, the company's revenue over the past 10 years has mostly been trending upwards. Next, looking at the operating income. The operating income is what we get when we subtract the cost of goods and operating expenses from the company's revenue. Back in 2011, the company's operating income was about $11 billion, and for the year 2020, it was about $4 billion. Unlike the trend of the company's revenue, the company's operating income did see some fluctuations. Specifically, in the year 2014, it saw a significant drop in the company's operating income.
This goes to show that in the year 2014, the company was unable to keep its cost of goods and operating expenses in check. Next, looking at the net income. The net income is the bottom line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that's left with the company once it has paid for the cost of goods, operating expenses, non-operating expenses, interest on its debt obligations, and taxes. Back in 2011, Ford's net income was about $20 billion. In the year 2019, it was about $47 million, and it was negative in the year 2020, which tells us that the company reported a loss, primarily because of its below-the-line expenses. Over the past 10 years, the company's net income has been fluctuating, and that tells us that either the company is unable to keep its cost of goods or expenses in check, or it has below-the-line one-time expenses or sales that is either deflating or inflating the company's net income. Next, looking at the dividends per share. Back in 2012, the company paid out about 20 cents per share as dividend. And for the year 2020, it paid out about 15 cents per share as dividend. The company has been paying out dividends every year since 2012. After that, looking at the shares outstanding. Back in 2011, the company had 4,111 million shares outstanding. And for the trailing 12 months, it had 3,986 million shares outstanding. Over the past 10 years, the company's shares outstanding number have been going up and down. The shares outstanding number increases when the company issues more shares. In other words, when the management is trying to look for cash to fund its projects, it may end up doing equity financing and issuing more shares as a way to find cash for those projects. And when the management is unable to find an investment with a good ROI, then it ends up buying back its shares, which is when we see the shares outstanding number decrease. Next is the book value per share. The book value is what we get when we subtract the company's total liabilities from its total assets. Back in 2011, the company's book value was about $1.57 per share, and for the trailing 12 months, it's $8.47 per share. Over the past 10 years, the company's book value per share has always been positive and is trending upwards. That tells us that the company always had more assets than liabilities on its balance sheet, and the proportion of the company's total assets to its total liabilities is increasing. Finally, looking at the free cash flow. The free cash flow is what we get when we subtract capital spending from the company's operating cash flow. Back in 2011, Ford's free cash flow was about $5.5 billion, and for the year 2020, it was about $18 billion. Ideally, we want to see the company's free cash flow to be positive, staying steady, or increasing, and it's good to see that Ford's free cash flow has always been positive. That tells us that the company brings in enough cash from its operations to support its capital investments. I will be using the past 10 years of free cash flows from my expected rate of return calculation, and I will be using the average of the past 3 years of free cash flows from my discounted free cash flow DCF analysis. Now let's look at the profitability of the company, focusing on the net margin. The net margin is the ratio of the company's bottom line to its top line, so it compares the company's net income to its revenue. Back in 2011, the company's net margin was about 14.83%. For the year 2019, it was at 0.03%, and it was a negative number in the year 2020 because the company reported a loss. Ideally, we want to see the company's net margin to be a big fat positive number. And what this means is for the year 2019, every $100 that the company made in sales, by the time it paid for its cost of goods, operating expenses, non-operating expenses, interest on its debt obligations, and taxes, it only had $0.03 left as pure profit. After that, looking at return on equity. The return on equity is the ratio of the company's net income to its shareholders' equity. Warren Buffett prefers to only invest in securities that have a return on equity of 8% or greater every year for the past 10 years. Back in 2011, Ford's return on equity was about 281%. For the year 2019, it was at 0.14%, and it was a negative number in the year 2020 because the company's income was negative. Next, looking at the return on invested capital. This number gives an idea of how good the management is at allocating the company's capital and getting a return on that investment. Back in 2011, the company's return on invested capital was about 20.92%. For the year 2019, it was at 3.76%. And for the year 2020, it's at 3.07%. Ford's weighted average cost of capital, also known as the company's hurdle rate, is about 4.9%. And since the company's return on invested capital is less than the company's weighted average cost of capital, we can say that the company's management is not creating value for its shareholders. Additionally, one of the biggest reasons why automakers have such a low PE and sell at a cheap stock price is because of the subpar return on invested capital numbers. We can see that the company's return on equity is rather high. However, the company's return on invested capital is subpar. This is primarily because most of the return that we see here is funded by debt. And when we take into account the company's debt, the overall return is not that good. When investors are given a choice of investing in a company that has a high return on invested capital, such as those stocks in the tech sector which have little to no debt, and another option where the company is very debt heavy and has low return on invested capital numbers, it's safe to say that individuals would want to pick and go with the high return on invested capital tech stock. Finally, looking at the interest coverage. The interest coverage is the ratio of the company's income to its interest obligations. So it gives an idea of how many times can the company pay off its interest obligations using its income in that calendar year. Back in 2011, the company's interest coverage was at 2.96 times, and for the year 2020, it was at 0.89 times. Benjamin Graham, the father of value investing, preferred to only invest in securities that had an interest coverage of 5 times or higher. Now let's look at the financial health of the company, focusing on the liquidity ratios. The first item on the list is the current ratio. The current ratio compares the company's current assets to its current liabilities. Ideally, we want to see the company's current ratio to be greater than 1.0, as that tells us that the company has more than enough current assets to fulfill its current liabilities. Back in 2011, the company's current ratio was at 1.65, and for the latest quarter, it's at 1.21. Next is the quick ratio. The quick ratio is similar to the current ratio, except we disregard the inventory component. In other words, quick ratio is equal to current assets minus inventory divided by current liabilities. Ideally, we want to see the company's quick ratio to be greater than 1.0, as that tells us that the company does not have to rely on selling its inventory in order to fulfill its current liabilities. Back in 2011, the company's quick ratio was at 1.56, and for the latest quarter, it's at 1.03. After that, looking at the financial leverage, the financial leverage is the ratio of the company's total assets to its shareholders' equity. A high financial leverage tells us that more of the company's assets are financed via liabilities. Back in 2011, the company's financial leverage was at 11.87, and for the latest quarter, it's at 7.71. Finally, looking at the debt-to-equity ratio, this ratio compares the company's total debt to its shareholders' equity. Ideally, we want to see the company's debt-to-equity ratio to be less than 1.0. Back in 2011, Ford's debt-to-equity was at 3.94, and for the latest quarter, it's at 3.08. Over the past few years, the company's financial leverage and debt-to-equity ratios have stayed fairly consistent. At the same time, Ford's financial leverage and debt-to-equity ratios are higher than its competitor, GM. Now let's look at the efficiency ratios. The first item on the list is the day sales outstanding. This number gives an idea of how many days go by from the day Ford recognizes its sale to the day it actually receives cash for that service rendered. Back in 2011, Ford's day sales outstanding was about 209 days. And for the trailing 12 months, it's at 159 days. Ideally, we want to see the company's day sales outstanding number to be staying steady or decreasing, and that is what we're seeing in the case of Ford. Next, looking at the day's inventory, this number gives an idea of how many days does Ford's products sit in its inventory before they're sold. Back in 2011, the company's day's inventory was about 19 days, and for the trailing 12 months, it's at about 39 days. Ideally, we want to see the company's day's inventory to be staying steady or decreasing. However, in the case of Ford, the day's inventory has been increasing. After that, looking at payables period, this number gives an idea of how many days does Ford take to pay its suppliers. Back in 2011, Ford took about 55 days to pay its suppliers, and for the trailing 12 months, it took about 69 days to pay its suppliers. Ideally, we want to see the company's payables period to be staying steady or decreasing. However, an increasing payables period tells us that the company may be trying to hoard on to its cash in order to artificially inflate its cash flow numbers. Finally, looking at the inventory turnover, this number gives an idea of how many times does Ford's inventory go through its system in a calendar year. Back in 2011, the company's inventory turnover was about 19 times, and for the trailing 12 months, it's about 9 times. Over the past 10 years, the company's inventory turnover has been decreasing, and that is not a trend we would like to see. Now let's compare Ford's current valuation to that of the S&P 500. The S&P 500 is the aggregate of the top 500 companies in the United States. The first item on the list is the price-to-earnings ratio. Ford's PE is 15.3, whereas S&P 500 is at 26.1. Ford's price-to-book is at 1.8, whereas S&P 500 is at 4.3. Ford's price-to-sales is at 0.5, whereas S&P 500 is at 3.1. Ford's price to cash flow is at 2.1, whereas S&P 500 is at 17.2. And finally, the dividend yield. Ford does not have a dividend yield reported right now, whereas S&P 500 has a dividend yield of 1.5%. So we can see that on all these four valuation metrics, Ford is undervalued when compared to the S&P 500. Hey guys, now let's look at Ford's discounted free cash flow DCF analysis. Over here, I pasted Ford's 3-year average free cash flow that I got from Morningstar, which is at $11,929 million. The company's annual growth rate, I'm assuming that to be 5%. What this means is I expect Ford's free cash flow to grow at 5% every year for the next 10 years. The company's discount rate, I'm using 10%. What this means is I want this investment to give me a 10% return. Ford's long-term growth rate, I'm assuming that to be 2%. What this means is after the 10-year mark into perpetuity, I expect Ford's free cash flow to grow at 2%. Ford has 3,986 million shares outstanding and has a long-term debt of $110,341 million. I got this number from Ford's balance sheet. After taking all of these inputs into account, we get the intrinsic value to be about $18.57 per share. And when we compare this intrinsic value to the company's current stock price of about $15.2 per share, we can see that the current stock is trading about 18% below the company's intrinsic value. The way we calculate this intrinsic value is we look at what the free cash flows would be every year for the next 10 years. We sum up all those cash flows, which come out to about $93 billion. Then we look at what the free cash flows would be after the 10-year mark into perpetuity. We sum all those up to get the intrinsic value to be about $184 billion. From this number, we subtract the long-term debt and divide by the shares outstanding to get the intrinsic value per share to be about $18.57. Now, if you disregard the perpetuity component, in other words, if you think that Ford is only going to grow for the next 10 years and then it'll cease to exist, then we get our intrinsic value to be a negative number. What this means is Ford is not able to generate enough free cash flow and accumulate enough cash flow in order to counter its existing debt. Finally, if you think that Ford is going to grow into perpetuity, so there is no point for the company to even worry about paying its debt, then we get the intrinsic value without the debt to be about $46.25 per share. Hey guys, now let's look at Ford's expected rate of return calculation. Over here, I pasted the past 10 years of free cash flows that I got from Morningstar. All the numbers here are in millions of US dollars. This is the yearly free cash flow trend that we get over the past 10 years. There were a few years when the free cash flows saw a decline. However, for the most part, the company's free cash flow is trending upwards. Next, looking at the future data and predictions, I'm assuming that there's a 35% likelihood that Ford's free cash flow will grow at 5%. There's a 50% likelihood that its free cash flow will grow at 3%, and a 15% likelihood that its free cash flow will decline at 5%. These are the potential free cash flow rates that we get into the future. After taking into account the numbers of shares outstanding, which is at 3,986 million shares, at the current stock price of about $15.19 per share, we can expect to get an annual return of about 33.8% on this investment. What this means is, if you were to purchase a share of Ford at the current stock price of about $15.19 per share and hold the security through 2040, then we can expect to get an annual return of about 33.8% on this investment. Hey guys, now let's wrap it all up. We briefly went over Ford's 10K annual report. We saw that the company has three operating segments, and its automotive segment brings in majority of the company's revenue, whereas most of its assets are tied up in its Ford Credit segment. Ford's revenue over the past 10 years has been trending upwards. However, the company's operating income and net income has seen some volatilities and fluctuations in the past 10 years, which tells us that Ford is unable to keep its cost of goods, operating expenses, and/or non-operating expenses in check. Ford has paid out regular dividends from 2012 through 2020. The company did suspend its dividends in the early part of the pandemic as it was trying to conserve its cash. Over the past 10 years, the company's shares outstanding have been going up and down, which tells us that the company issues more shares when it's trying to finance its growth, and at the same time, when it does not have any available opportunities to invest, it ends up buying back its shares. For majority of the past 10 years, Ford's return on equity has been greater than 8%. However, this high return on equity number is driven by the company's increased liabilities, which is caused by the company's debt-heavy capital structure, which makes the company's equity portion a tiny number, leading to an inflated return on equity number. Next, we saw that Ford's return on invested capital is less than the company's weighted average cost of capital, which tells us that management is not creating value for its shareholders. Additionally, the company's interest coverage is less than 5x. After that, we looked at the company's financial health and liquidity ratios, and both the quick and current ratio point out that the company has more than enough current oxygen in its system to survive for another 12 months. The company's financial leverage and debt-to-equity ratio, on the other hand, is much higher than its competitor, GM. When we looked at the efficiency ratios, we saw that Ford was able to go through more of its inventory 10 years ago than it is right now. So in that sense, the company was more efficient with its inventory 10 years ago than it is today. Next, we saw that on majority of the current valuation metrics, Ford was undervalued when compared to the S&P 500. When we performed a discounted free cash flow DCF analysis using a 10% discount rate, our intrinsic value came to about $18.6 per share, which when we compare that to the company's current stock price of about $15.2 per share, would indicate that the current stock is trading about 18% below the company's intrinsic value. After that, when we performed the expected rate of return calculation, we found out that if we were to invest in Ford at the current stock price of about $15.19 per share, we can expect to get an annual return of about 33.8% on this investment. Overall, Ford is an undervalued security. However, the company is very top-heavy. In other words, Ford has a lot of debt and is highly leveraged, which means that during booming markets, when Ford's revenue is swelling, Ford's shareholders are going to do great. However, when the tides turn and Ford's revenue starts shrinking, the shareholders are going to see the pain as the bondholders are going to be first in line to collect their checks, leaving the shareholders with barely any profit. Hey guys, that is all I had for you this week. Hopefully you found this video on Ford interesting. If you like this content, please do like, share, comment, and subscribe. And if you have any suggestions as to which stock I should review next, please leave it in the comment section below. I will greatly appreciate it. Thank you.